Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HourEnergy.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HourEnergy.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
Hey guys, welcome back to the Art of Craftsmanship podcast. My name is Dustin O'Hara, and I'm here with my brother and co-host Devin.
Hi.
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 All right, Dev, what do you got for us today?
A lack of love. Love needs to be present. A lack of it will diminish everything into mediocrity. The word love, when used in relationship to business, undoubtedly causes some to roll eyes and some to think, what a dopey thing to say. But the creative process and the business surrounding it, if devoid of love, is a very hollow endeavor.
All right. Yeah.
That was from Richard Taylor, which is the co-founder and creative director of Weta Workshop.
Okay.
Down in New Zealand.
Taylor. Yeah. Nice. Weta.
Weta. If you've ever watched any making of Lord of the Rings, he's the main guy. He runs the shop pretty much. And he's the man. I love hearing him talk about making things, and I'm going to do an early recommendation because it goes I was watching Tested. So obviously tested, but they've been doing a series of, in 2020, I think they went down to Weta and they toured this, Weta Workshop, but Weta Workshop's now doing this thing called Weta Workshop Unleashed.
Yeah. With bigatures and stuff.
Yeah. So it's a tour of things they've made, but it's also, they're making all new things.
So that's sweet.
There's this great video called, Adam Savage visits Weta Workshop's Dragon Fire Forge. So it's just a, Weta version fantasy forge that they're making. Yeah. But, the anvil, you can lift it up because it's made of, polystyrene and, there's all these things. But the video is Adam and Richard just walking around this, set that they're in the middle of building and talking about every little thing. And Richard Taylor, he knows every person that's made everything. These are made by this guy, and this guy did a great job on this, and look at this. And every little bit is something fun and interesting that they've crafted. Right. Gloves and the shoes and this and all the all the stuff around the anvil and all the weapons. It's tried to make the fire look real and there's one part where the forge coals, right? That are glowing. Right. And he's I watched something on, I don't know if it was YouTube, but he was the internet, just read up and found out this little trick, how to make this, So he's also this pro, this guy who's made, Lord of the Rings and Mad Max, great movies. He's still going online and looking, oh, that's cool. Look at that.
Still looking for tips and tricks.
Yeah. And trying things, but it's a really cool video. And he talks, he's the head of the place, but he still makes little bits and bobs and they all just, roll their sleeves up and get to work. It's a cool series of videos.
Yeah. I was watching the one where they're showing the part of one of the bigatures that they've been working on for a while. And just talking about the way they did the rocks and things where they can take casts of rock that's actually there in New Zealand. And it's a good rock because it looks like rock that's normal size when you're standing next to it, but it also looks like a cliff from a distance. You know, like the amount of the size variation in the texture of it is so versatile. And when they're filming it, they can film it and it look like a cliff edge, but it could also look like a rock that you're sitting on. You know, right. So it's like, that was pretty cool. And, you know, they're actually casting real rock and then using those casts or making molds of real rock and using those to make all their plaster casts and stuff and all their, you know, their like lightweight bigatures and stuff.
Yeah.
So cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. I like that, though. I like that, you know, that he knows everybody's name. He knows everyone who's working there. And that's that, like your quote was saying, you know, a company run with love. Like, you know, people want to work there because, you know, it's a welcoming place.
Right.
You know?
And he's not saying love to be, like you said, dopey or hokey. He's right. doing it that if you don't love the art of what you're doing, the creative aspect, it will diminish into mediocrity, which is true. It's like any job that people don't like being in, they just do the bare minimum to get by, and that's mediocrity. So, but not everyone's lucky enough to work at Weta Workshop, so it's a little bit easier there to have fun at work.
But I mean, I think that's the same thing. All these big companies like Google and Amazon, I mean, all these companies are, and a lot of new places are building in that type of excitement to come to work, you know, whether that's like a break room that's got like some, you know, like a beer tap, you know, you can have a beer during lunch, or you can, or like a weight room, or, you know, like that's a thing.
Is that a place?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I know that like our buddy Tom, you know, used to work at a bunch of different video game companies, and they all like their break rooms are all like loaded, you know, like with all sorts of cool stuff, make you want to stay at work.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
You're there at 6, 7, 8 o'clock, and you go to the break room and get some good dinner thing out of it, and grab a Red Bull, and you know it's all there for them. You know, it makes them want to stay. So,
yeah, man.
But yeah, like yeah, I think that's important too. It's like ideally we could all have jobs that we love, and you know, employers that feel that same way, and you can't all, but at least you can. I guess the point is that you should be able to enjoy your job and appreciate the employment enough that you will want to work hard for your employer, and that is helped by someone who shows appreciation to their employees, even if it's a job you don't like. You know, you're like working on like a road team, you're like putting down blacktop. but if you're like your boss likes you, you know, and or he's like, you know, is appreciative and shows that, then you want to work hard for them no matter what it is.
Yeah. I think, but if it's more creative endeavor aimed, that's where I think you have to have some type of love in what you're doing. And that's just the thing. Right. Most creative people, you get excited over something you're doing, and that's just that fuels you.
And that
excitement
shows through. Yeah. Yeah.
And again, like we say, whatever you get excited about, just follow that.
Yeah.
Like, this part's kind of boring. This part's kind of boring. I love this part.
Yeah.
All right. Focus on that part. That's probably going to be probably what you're best at as well.
Right. Exactly. Yeah.
The thing that comes easy and is fun to do.
Right. I think that obviously also comes through in our YouTube channel. It's like, what's the next cool thing that I can make that is interesting to me, you know? And like following up on that. And I think that comes through and shows the interest when there's, you know, and I think even if it's something that I didn't think of like automatically that would be really interesting to make or do, it's like there's always elements of creating that are exciting to me. You know, if nothing else, it's the end of like knowing that you went from a bunch of pieces of stuff and then you come away with a thing that does something, you know, and it does it the way you want it to do it, or at least, you know, how you've compromised to get it to do what you want it to do.
Speaking of compromise and not finishing exactly what we wanted to do, I just got done exporting rendering and exporting to a file that I can send to YouTube, the toy box, the not so magical toy box.
Right, yeah.
that you made for my daughter. But the video's good, and it's kind of like a jigsaw video.
Yeah.
And I left a lot of the parts in where you're just kind of holding pieces up going back, signed.
Yeah,
and
right.
Then you pull one over and you kind of lay it, then you go, okay, that's 5, okay. Because it's kind of, and it's, you kind of work along. When I was watching, I was working along with you, like, oh, okay, that's, because up until like 5 minutes into the video, it's stacks of wood.
Right.
Yeah, and then exactly. We start to see you pull it up, hold it. Oh, that's cool. That. And then yeah. I'm trying to get a, I don't know. I always have a good idea of trying to give people a wide picture of what's happening.
Right.
Like sometimes if it's all close-ups, you don't know what the hell's going on. It looks nice and it's cool to see that.
Right.
But you need to go wide and literally it's what show the zoom out of the map and see your whole like your whole journey.
Right. Exactly.
Oh, that's that. That's this. I got to do this and this. So
Just
staying wide sometime, you have to see all the tools and everything. Right. And especially for this is like one of the bigger things you've made. So it's...
Right. So you stay out a little bit. But yeah, I mean, because, you know, working with something like that, we have an idea of how it's going to look at the end. And then going from that idea, you have to put together the cut sheet. You know, so to get the wood and then cut out all the pieces. And you don't really know how it's going to fit together until everything's cut. And then put together, you know, or at least like stood up in place, like you said,
And being able
to, you know, zoom out a little bit and get a bit broader perspective on the whole project, you understand, okay, that's all these things are coming together, not just, you know, left side, right side, they look exactly the same, bottom, front, back, you know, they're a little different, but more cuts.
So that's cool. It's cool to see it come together and then figure out how to screw it together and hide most of the things and then it's just kind of done at the end. And I just got some shots yesterday of Maeve. Playing, you know, in the toy box, reaching in, you know, going in the bottom, like reaching in the bottom, hidden panel thing.
All right.
But so, yeah, we wanted to do it where there was an auto lift button. That was going to be like an angle, like, oh, like it's a toy box, but we'll do magical. So you push a button and it pops open.
Right.
And then also hidden floor or a hidden...
Bottom. Hidden bottom, right? So there's that like extra space at the bottom, which we did do that. And then, you know, we have the soft close and soft open, but it just, we couldn't get that like full spring latch without, you know, without taking a decent more time and buying more things. And, you know, it could have worked, but it wasn't imperative for the outcome of the toy box. That it had to have the magic button, you know, like and the spring release button.
You said, well, there's a, we get to that point in the video and you say, well, we're going to abandon the button. We got like this gap here that we're thinking of how to get it to pop up because we just put the hydraulic lift in. What can we do to get it to extend and pop up the first 6 inches to get it to keep going and this and that. Right. But then you also say, well, Caitlin's daughter also needs her toy box. It's been 6 months. And now, since the beginning of that video, it's been a year. So, I mean, it's like one of the longest videos we've ever done. Not any design by any design. It's just we got halfway done and we had to do other videos.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Exactly.
And then we just kept having or doing other videos and not ever finishing this one. But we finally got it done.
Yeah.
And you say that in the video. We had to get rid of this and. But also, it was a point for if you have an idea how to do this, leave a comment, which is actually a real ask. Like, hey, if you have an idea, let us know, and we could always come back to it and just make that button.
Right. Because you know, there are definitely, like, I had a whole design drawn out of how I was going to make the button and how I was going to have a quick release or whatever, a latch that you could push and it would release it.
Yeah, we talked a good deal about it.
Right. So we had the theory, you know, like I had the design and the theory was there, but it was getting the actual mechanics working or the right mechanism to make it work. Right. I had the mechanics of the button, but like what we ended up getting was some gas struts to like, you know, let the whole thing spring out. And we had some spring hinges and things, which seemed like they were going to work, but then they weren't strong enough. And so there was like, it was just, I guess the idea is that we could have gotten there. Like we could have bought more stuff and tried more things and we definitely could have gotten there. But in that situation, it wasn't imperative for the function of the final product. to right. do that. You know?
To hold toys. It can hold toys. Exactly. It's a toy right. box.
Yeah. And it has a soft close. It's not going to close on our fingers. You know, you can kind of soft close, soft open, you know, so it does that. It does what we wanted. Like, we wanted to have something that was fun that would, like, open and close kind of on its own softly. And so it does that.
But, right.
Yeah. And I think it's important sometimes to understand when you can back off of an idea and you can be happy with what you have.
Right.
You know, obviously you want to push yourself a lot of times to, like, go, you know, get what you want, get to that end goal. But sometimes it's not as important to get to that final end goal that you thought you had an idea for, but you've come to a point where you've reached, like, a perfectly capable final product.
Right.
And it may not be exactly what your end product was, but I guess that's, you know, that just gives you creative drive to try to do something in the future or later that might work better, or, you know, try again.
Yeah. And it was
another
just
iteration.
And so you just run out of time. I mean, we had shot a lot longer than we thought we would on it. There kept being things like we had the spring hinges that we would thought would pop it up. That didn't. And we had to figure out how to put them in because there was an extra gap in the back. And should we put something on the top? It was like every step of the way, other than cutting the stuff out, that was the easy part.
Right. Yeah, right. Exactly.
We pretty much had it all screwed together except for the lid and the bottom.
Yeah,
and
that, like 2 days.
It was still another like 3 or 4 shooting days of like little bits and bobs. Like, oh, that didn't work. Oh, that didn't work. Let's just.
Yeah. And then, like you said, then we had other like deadline videos to come out with and things. Yeah. So we had to like put it on hold a couple times. And then it was just like, you guys need a toy box for me. You
know? Right. I mean, we had a big cardboard box, literally.
Right. Yeah.
For all the big toys she had in the living room. So I was like, all right, we need something now. And just, my wife had asked me multiple times about it. So I was like, all right, let's just wrap it up and then take it home. And we sanded and painted it. And the only thing that works great. The only thing is the sides are still
a little too tight.
A little too tight. So I'll have to trim it way. I mean, we should have cut off like
another quarter.
More, a quarter. Sides, right. That's right. Just any warping. Cause it was like perfect until we let it sit in the wet basement for 6 months. And then just everything squish sides or something expanded
just
or something
warped
shrunk.
A little bit.
Just enough to
be like touching. On the sides of the top when it springs open.
Half the time we just leave it open, but it still does the job. And that bottom space is great for like puzzles and all that stuff that you want to put away and like keep intact until the next time you can like pull them out for. Like, here's and here's that. Like, let's play with these now. And then, you know, it's not just not just, you know, the puzzle flips over in the toy box and it's like all the pieces are, you know,
all
you never
inside.
Find them.
And that's the thing, too. It's like having a place where you can put in flat stuff that's not in the bottom of the toy box, right? Because then you got to unload all the toys to get out the flat stuff. So you can put, puzzles and games and whatever. You have a space in the bottom to slide them in from the front.
Yeah.
Which that was cool. I think that turned out really well, that like hidden space underneath, you know. So it's just that trim piece across the front, but it's magnetized. So you just pop it out and boop, it opens up. You know, a little hidden space in there. So. A slightly magical toy box.
Something like that. We'll figure out. And hopefully we can put it out. I don't know. We still have to get okays from sponsors because we also recorded a new sponsorship ad for it.
Yep.
Of Dustin doing watercolor and us talking about a watercolor video on Skillshare. So
And I thought that was like, kind of, I guess an important aspect of what I do as a creative person is that I have a wide variety of skill sets that I pull from, and all those things help to influence what we do on the channel.
Yeah.
And so, you know, if it's composing on a knife, you know, like where I want the proportions of a blade and a handle and the guard and all to seem really nice, you know, those, that like ability to compose and to understand proportions all come from, you know, my years and years of doing painting from observation or drawing from observation or, you know, ceramics. It's just all those fine art skills all come out in craft skills as well. So I thought that was kind of a cool angle and not one that I've seen all that often, that people, you know, makers don't often talk about how fine art is important to what they do. Yes. I mean, I think they do, but maybe not on sponsorships. So I think that'd be kind of a cool angle.
I put it together and it's nice. So
sweet.
That'll be in our video, and we won't put We won't put a YouTube ad on it, so.
Yeah.
I'm thinking that unless there's a really long video, maybe this bow video, who knows how long it'll be. But if there's an ad we put on it, I don't think I'll add another
an
YouTube ad.
With a sponsorship, yeah.
So at least you can sit through the whole thing and or just skip through our ad in the middle. Like, it doesn't matter. But if you do, you don't have to, you can skip through it, but if you do want to support us, sign up for a Skillshare thing using one of our links so the sponsor keeps us around.
Yeah, that would be nice. I know we mentioned that on the podcast already, but you know, it would really help to, you know, have people support the sponsors. And Skillshare is obviously a huge sponsor and sponsors tons and tons of other channels. And so it's not hurting for users, but it helps them understand that our viewers and our listeners are influenced by some of what we do, what we say.
We need to get a sponsorship that doesn't have links, because then they really know. They know exactly how many people.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
We just need, like, Coca-Cola. Just in general, we're putting out the word for you.
Yeah. Well, that's not how it works. Just in general.
Well, it does. Yeah, I mean, that is how ads work.
Yeah, I know. But
except for modern YouTube ads, where they want you to sign up for a link. They want everyone to sign up for stuff. You can't. It's like,
right. It's not just the ad. Well, that's because that's how they know if their money is being put in the right places, right? You know, they have the analytic You know, if you sponsor a video and then you get a bunch of sign-ons from that video, you're going to keep sponsoring that.
But I mean, even if they don't, if you get a million views, they're still going to sponsor you.
Right. Exactly.
But if you get neither, they might not. So
yes,
we're gonna keep plugging away, and we got two big videos coming up. One which we've already started, and you put that picture out on Instagram. That was cool.
Yeah, that's awesome. Video number 100. Yeah, it'll be the Warbow. I'm excited, man. I was getting excited just working on it when we were doing it the other day. I'm like, oh, this is fun. I want to make bows more often. This is exciting. So yeah, that's going to be awesome. I'm excited to have something that strong and shoot it, and you know, just that amount of power behind that. And I was I was talking to Mom and Dad today, and Dad mentioned, like, he's like, yeah, you have to get some real big heavy arrows. And I was like, oh, you're right. I will have to get something like heavier to shoot out of it. I mean, those like the East. Yeah, I mean, my normal wooden arrows, I wouldn't shoot out of it just because it might be it's high. That draw weight is really high.
You can just get some carbon fiber ones.
Yeah, right. Or like aluminum Easton arrows, like the ones that, you know, you can get for $2 or $3 at Dick's or whatever. You know, so I'll get a couple of those to shoot for the video. Maybe I'll paint them something fun or something, you know, customize them. But yeah, that'll be interesting. And that might be kind of a fun, we could do like a distance test. I was thinking about that too. Like, go out on the golf course and shoot, you know, try to shoot 1,000 yards or something and see how it goes. It'd be really cool. You know, maybe even do like take the 50-pound hickory bow and then the 65-pound Osage and then the 100-pound Osage and see the difference, you know, where they, if they make, if it's a considerable distance as far, or a considerable difference as far as distance goes.
Yeah.
Cool. Someone mentioned in one of our bow videos, they were like, oh, you guys really should have a speed camera gun so you can tell us really the speed of it. So we, you know, that's what's most important when you're shooting out of it. And like, yeah, that would be cool. Who's, you going to buy us a speed gun? Like,
a speed camera. And what, speed guns can't, they don't track arrows.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
They don't track quarter of an inch wood like flying by. You need a, you need a person or a car.
Yeah, or you need like, you need a high speed camera, and then you need a
background, like, that,
a background that you can judge the distance off of, at your frame rate, blah blah blah. Yeah, yeah, it's not just like a, it's not a speed gun, like,
right. Yeah, like, all right, it hit 130.
Yeah, right, exactly. It's not gonna capture that it's not, the arrow.
Yeah, but anyway,
it's like it's moving zero. Yeah, that's because you're just seeing me. But yeah, that's exciting. I'm really excited to have that bow, and we started with a bow, like a blank that I had already roughed out. So it's like, I'm like, man, it's so convenient that it almost makes me want to just do a bunch, like rough out a bunch and have them ready to go. Cause then it's like, then they're ready. You know, it's like doing the hard work in the beginning and then just have it ready. That way I have a bunch of bow blanks that are relatively shaped, you know, it's like marked off. And what I did, the reason why I did it that way is because when the Osage is in the full stave form before, you know, right when it's split out of the log, it takes a long time for that to dry and season. So the thinner you can get it, the closer to an actual bow size, you know, and thickness and limb width and stuff you can get it, the quicker the moisture will dry out of it, so you can make a good bow out of it. So this one's actually been sitting since 2015 in that state, which is pretty surprising. It's kind of cool. But yeah, it's ready to go. So I made it like jump from, you know, stave right to bow that's ready to be start to be tillered almost. You know, he's got to cut down a bunch of it on the bandsaw and thin it out more and work it down to its actual final proportions and stuff. But other than that, you know, we're already down to me, you know, looking at it now and thinking, okay, how much more do I need to take off before I can start doing a little bit of heat bending on the limbs to get them where I want them, you know, which is, you know, usually in the process of Osage bow making, that's like halfway through the process. And this is after like 3.5 hours of working on it and shooting, you know, and filming at the same time. So,
right.
You know, I appreciate past Dustin for all the work he did on that bow.
If the, you want to do the recurve.
Yeah. Recurve tips. Yep.
So
that'd be cool.
Yeah. So, I mean, that will add more time.
Yep.
Getting all that stuff right will add more time. But if we have enough time, then hopefully we can spend a little bit more time on the testing of it. Knock on wood, that it shoots well, that it's close to what we want it to be poundage-wise. Then maybe we can, set up some, like, spend a whole day shooting. Because usually when we get done, it's like we're always rushing towards the end. We get excited because you're at the end of the video. And we're like, oh, I think we can finish it today. And, we have an hour of light left. Let's hurry up and shoot it.
Right.
Like, let's shoot the bow, make sure it's working, get a couple shots, thumbnails before it's dark, and then we're done.
Right.
So maybe we can spend a whole day, like you said, distance test, power test.
Right, yeah, see how,
like,
far it
a
goes.
Good, I think that might be important to show that, because it will kind of look like the other bows to the naked eye. Obviously, it'll be thicker and but, you know, in comparison, not by much.
Right.
You know, between an eighth and who knows how much more wood on it that you can barely tell, or a quarter inch or something, you know, like.
Right, yeah, with that, like, the difference between a 60-pound draw and a 100-pound draw is not that big of a visual difference in the limb.
Right.
You know,
right.
it's like a, yeah, like an overall, maybe a 16th of an inch extra overall everything, you know, or maybe up to an eighth of an inch, which, like you said, doesn't look any different.
Yeah, really. So that won't look different, you're right. And so we'll have to, maybe we can pick, like, three categories, or maybe two, like power, distance.
Right.
I don't know what would another category be that you'd want for the the test of a bow. I mean accuracy, but that's not really. That has to do with the shooter.
Yeah, I guess it's really just the power of the bow. You know, obviously distance matters, but, you know, being able to shoot it far distances, that is huge. But how much power it has, you know, if you can shoot an arrow through like plate armor. Right, that's the reason why war bows exist, or be able to go through chainmail or something, you know, like.
Maybe we could fashion up, like, or have someone to fashion us up something like that.
Yeah, right, exactly. Or, you know, I mean, I have different thicknesses of sheet steel, so we could kind of put them on the target, you know, and see what it shoots through.
Yeah, or cool. You could do like leather armor.
Right, yeah.
And maybe some type of chainmail, and then some steel.
Right.
Oh, man, that'd be cool.
Yeah,
see
what it does. Yeah, maybe I can order a couple, bodkin points, you know, like, because that's the armor piercing.
Oh, yeah.
Kind of like a triangle, you know, sharp triangle point or whatever, diamond.
Yeah, maybe, maybe you can get some different, get different tips to, like, try it out, like. The bigger one, the heavy ones that are, like, fat. You know, you could hit a vegetable with that.
Yeah, yeah.
Make it explode a little bit.
Yeah, I think it'd be fun.
Oh, that'd be fun.
Yeah, right, exactly. And that's what you were saying, you know, like, take a day to shoot that. Because, like, we always get to the end of the video and we're ready to get it done and get it out. You know, it's like, let's go. Because we get excited, you know. But, yeah, spending some time to do some fun stuff and just put it through its paces. Then it makes sense of, like, why do you make a war bow? Oh, for fun, but also, you know, because it's interesting to see what it can do different than a regular bow, you know, than a hunting bow.
Maybe I'll work on some stuff, or maybe I'll, it depends if I have time. Maybe yeah. I can do some of the like stands with stuff on them, you know, like
right, yeah,
leather and this and that and see, but or maybe we get like a mannequin. I don't know.
Yeah.
We need another creator nearby who can like
make us some armor.
Yeah, make us some chainmail. Like,
yeah, right. Yeah,
or maybe we can order some off Amazon. Something yeah, like
they
that.
Have those, they have those chainmail like cast iron, like wash rags, like dish rags or dish towels. You know, yeah. Like so it might be like a 12x12 inch. Made out of stainless chain mail. You know, yeah. It's like they're small rings, but I'm sure we could probably get like some pieces like that, you know, just get some chunks of stuff or whatever, you know, get some, obviously I can get some different gauges of steel. I have some thin sheet steel, like the roofing material for the smithy, but then I also have some thicker stuff. So it'd be kind of interesting to see what we can punch through.
If you make small chainmail shirts for mice and you're listening to this and can send it to us in 2 weeks,
what about the yeah right,
we'll pay for it and we'll, but we need something.
What about the little soldier from Saudi Arabia? Does he have anything? He's got a little shield, right?
Yeah, that's right, he has a little tin aluminum. I got plenty of aluminum, so if you're wearing aluminum armor, it's definitely not going to be good.
But it'd be cool, like even with like I have the like you said, I have extra pieces of the roof metal for the smithy. We could do a few of them together, right? You know, like put one and then do two and then do three and see how many we could punch through.
Yeah.
With the war bow, you know, maybe angling it at just a slightly away from me so it doesn't come straight back and try to kill one of us.
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah.
I forgot about that. Maybe we need to. We might need a protective.
Yeah, right. A protective barrier somehow.
Half
yeah.
barrier, like pitchers yeah. have in batting practice. They've got like yeah. that right. netted thing.
Uh-huh. Yeah, well, that's like, was it the YouTube channel How Ridiculous? They've been doing a bunch of different stuff like that. Like how many, you know, sheets of glass can we shoot an arrow through? Or can we throw things through? You know, they like have the competition how many they can do. And they had that. They did like a shoot an arrow through glass or through – or. Through balloons or something like that, you know, to see how many you could do. So, and they had the same type of thing. They had some type of shield thing up where they were like standing right next to it and shooting out. I was like, oh.
Yeah, we should probably do that.
Yeah, probably a good idea.
Because, yeah, for people who don't know, when we shot up the Mac computer to see if we could shoot through it, the one with a broad head, you know, razor tipped arrow, it came straight back at me. And was probably, I don't know, I didn't know how close it was, but probably a few feet.
Within like 5 or 6 feet, but that's like, you know, you're shooting it away from me, directly away from you, then it comes straight back at you. And like, oh man, just a few feet over, that would have been
because I was off, I was off just to your right.
Yep, right,
and exactly. Then you were shooting the, I guess, the glass screen or something, yep. And it just came flying right at me. I mean, we should probably set up to like, whatever we can, scrap wood, scrap metal, just something tall. We can kind of lean, you know, have a little thing to hold it up and just have something there.
Yep, yeah, something for a little bit of protection, you know. Like just let's keep the viewers happy. You know, we want to keep making videos, so and the trolls are gonna be, oh, what are you doing? I guess those are probably the better trolls, the ones that are trying to like tell us to be safe.
Yeah, you know? I guess that's thanks, all right. Guy. I mean, we did almost get hurt the one video we did that before, so.
Right, exactly.
Maybe
probably
we should
a good idea, yeah.
Probably learn our lesson.
Or maybe we set it up further away, too. You know, I was like shooting, like trying to shoot blank point, you know.
Iron net, point, you know, yeah.
Point blank, point blank. Range, like. But.
But yeah, so all that, fun. We're getting stuff done. We're going to do, we have talked about, speaking of putting more work into it, more love into it, getting more videos going. Well, not more videos. We're going to. Our rate, really, our best rate, we think, is one big video a month.
Right, yeah.
It's because we both have jobs and everything else and families. That's pretty much all you can do because you're still shooting 3 to 7, you know, days. And then I'm doing the same to edit 3 to 2 a week nights editing. So it's just you kind of out of time. So if we can get Dustin a stable internet, right around when we're putting out the Bo video, we're going to try to do a live stream once a week.
Yeah.
And it can be under, answering all the questions that come in.
Right, yeah.
And then, obviously, you can just talk to people and maybe be doing small builds, whatever's in the workshop.
Yeah.
Just do that weekly to just have something every week where people can talk, just stop in and talk and hang out if they want.
Yeah, and I would do that more often. Like, the problem is that the internet here is not super stable, and then also the sound quality of it is not super great because we have troubles with the microphones for doing live streams. And I don't know why, because sometimes it works easy and sometimes it doesn't. It doesn't work at all.
Yeah, I think maybe we can, maybe this week I'll look it up and we'll get like a small switcher.
Right. Yeah.
And then maybe set up that the GoPro plugs into it or something like that, where you don't have to necessarily use your phone.
Right. That was the biggest thing. Like, I'm trying to shoot it from my phone. But if we had the GoPro hooked to the computer, then we could just do it that way.
Right. Yeah, you know? That's true. Yeah.
Yeah. And that works fine. You know, that would be fine. And then once we get the sound and stuff hooked up, then I'll be set. Because something like an Instagram Live, that because it's designed to work with a phone pretty much, the sound quality is always fine. You know, like, I don't know what that is. Maybe it's just, that's just what it is. And when I'm doing it, like trying to do a live video from my phone in YouTube, it's not really designed to work from the mobile app. Or it is, it's just not work, doesn't, it's not done as well. So the sound is not nearly as good. You know, it doesn't pick it up as well for some reason. I don't know why. Right. Because I, you know, because I'll do, like, I like doing live streams, and, you know, Instagram Live is super easy. I just hit it and then I'm going, you know, I don't have to hook anything up. But I'd be happy to hook up a mic if it all just went really flawlessly.
Yeah. So. That'd be perfect if we could do the wireless. If not, maybe we just run it from your computer and we have the, the podcast mic. You just use that.
Right. Yeah.
And then it just kind of be there. But.
Right.
So, yeah, we want to do that. So we have four of those, and we want to do one more video, but a day shoot.
Right.
It has to be a single day. Smaller video, but like maybe going out somewhere or into the woods testing stuff out, or or just small trips or smaller projects, or if you just come up with something you want to talk about.
Yeah, or more of the, like, you know, three things to do.
Right. Yeah.
You know, three tools for this or whatever. Since we did the three tools for knife making, you know, we could do bow making and axe restoration and tool restoration and, you know, woodworking and whatever, blacksmithing.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think that was pretty well received. That video got, you know, did pretty well and had good comments and stuff, which is cool.
Yeah. Yeah. Those are fun. So, yeah. So we're going to do more. And I know we say that a lot, but we have a plan, and especially with this 100th video. And I think we should do a live stream too, just like a celebration, when we hit 100,000 subscribers, just like 100th video. That's a big thing.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's, yeah, it's a great way to, like, thank our viewers and stuff, and maybe give some more stuff away for free. That was well received, and it was fun. So,
so all good things coming up. Before we go, you want to tell, last time we talked to you, you were on your way to a epic sailboat race.
Down the bay.
Do you want to give a quick recap how it went?
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. So Gov Cup was 2 weekends ago, and it was it 2 weekends ago? 3 weekends? I don't know. Whatever it was. It was maybe 2 weekends ago. But yeah, we did the Gov Cup real quick. Is a race that starts at the Chesapeake Bay in the Chesapeake here in Maryland, and then sails down the bay and into St. Mary's River to St. Mary's College, which is around 72 miles. And we overnight.
It starts right up around the Naval Academy, right?
Yeah, right outside of Annapolis in the Bay Bridge, Maryland. And then you sail south all through the night. We started at 3 o'clock in the afternoon and sailed all night and finished at about 5-something in the morning. Maybe just like 5:45, something like that. So, it was a great race, and we had all the stuff that we love and hate about races, where we had, you know, an hour and a half of no wind. So we're just sitting completely still, not going anywhere in the heat of the day, you know, and then we had big wind, and we had wind shifts, and we had, you know, some good upwind runs, and we had a nice long downwind. You know, the wind was behind us. We were able to put our spinnaker up and just sail down the bay all night, and, which is always nice because it's a comfortable ride and it's fast because you basically get to go in a straight line. And then, like, a really great last couple hours going upwind and racing in the pitch black, and I was driving the boat, you know, so I'm steering at the helm and controlling a sailboat at night when you can't see all of your different things that you reference to make sure that you're sailing correctly in the wind is all about feel. And that's just a super fun experience, and it's not like anything else. So, you know, sailing in the pitch black and working with someone else who's working my mainsail up and down while I'm driving the boat. And we had high winds, so we had everybody up on the high side, and it's like 3 o'clock in the morning and we're all there and we're getting excited for the end of the race and end up getting second place again, which is awesome.
Yeah.
So we got second place last year, and then this year we got second place by, I think, an hour and 10 minutes or something like that. So the guy who finished in front of us finished pretty decent ways ahead of us. They got a really good wind shift in the middle of the night, or kind of when it was getting dark, and they got this wind, you know, 40 minutes or an hour even before we did. And so they just picked up speed and just sailed down the bay. And by the time we got the same wind, they were already, you know, miles down.
Right.
So it's hard to make up that that distance. But we did, we got second place. The person who got third place was only about, I think it was something like 40 seconds or something behind us. And that's we actually corrected over them. So they finished in front of us, but because of the handicap system, we corrected our time corrected over them. So we got second place over them.
Right. And to tell people, the handicap system is different size boats.
Yeah, different size boats. So that way all different boats can all race in the same race. Everyone has a rating, and depending on the rating, you know, if there's our rating is 135. And so if someone has a higher rating, it means they're slower, and a lower rating means they're faster. So if someone had a 140 rating, that would be 5 points different from us, which equates to 5 seconds per mile of the race. So After a 70 mile race, you know, they owed us a certain amount of time because they're a bigger and faster boat. So even though they finished in front of us, they owed us enough time that we corrected over them by like 40 seconds or something, by 35, 40 seconds. I forget exactly, but I was like super stoked on that because I was on the helm for the last 4.5 hours of the race, racing upwind, you know, feeling that, trying to get the boat to go as fast as possible in the dark, like pitch black. And that, like, you know, that 40 seconds, it could have been like made up. I could have made up that 40 seconds in that amount of time. So
yeah,
I felt
yeah.
really good about that. And that was the first time that I'd actually finished a race on the helm. So driving the boat to the finish, because we always, during that race, it's so long that we take turns on the helm. We all take, you know, shifts. And in the past, we've done 3-hour shifts. This year we did 2-hour shifts because we had enough people that were helming. There were 4 of us that were taking turns. So it just makes it a little bit less rigorous. You know, you'd jump on, sail for 2 hours, let someone else take over. But the end of the race, I was on the helm, and we went around and we were going upwind, and I was like, I just want to stay on the helm. It was a high wind at that point where we were hauling down the bay, and we had all of our weight, like all 7 or 8 people up on the high side to counterbalance the boat, and we were just hauling ass. So I was like, I'm just going to stay on. If no one has a problem with that, I want to stay on and I want to finish the race out. So I ended up staying on. But by that point I was excited, and you know, it was early enough in the morning that after a couple hours, the sun was coming up at that 5 o'clock hour, and you know, we're all getting excited. So I definitely wasn't tired at all at that point, but
yeah, that's always nice when the sun starts peeking up. It gives everybody some life.
Yeah. You're like, oh, thank goodness. Yeah. Finally.
We made it.
Yeah. It's been dark for 12 hours, you know, like, right. Like, yeah, or maybe not that line, but
you start to see everything like, oh, there's that's that landmass is there. Oh, that's what I was looking at for 2 hours.
Right. Exactly. You just see, you know, before that's just lights and things off in the distance until you get really close to something, you know, it's like, what is that? Is that a ship coming at us? Or is that just a light? Is that a light on the far shore? And then 5 minutes later, like, oh, that's a ship. We got to get out of the channel. So, yeah, definitely is different levels of stress on a race like that. But it was a great race. It was awesome. And then we, you know, we stayed down there. So it's a Friday afternoon till Saturday morning. And then we stayed down there Saturday for the award ceremony and got some food and hung out, went swimming, and then stayed the night and sailed back. We actually ended up motoring back on Sunday because the wind was directly behind us, which would have been fine for a sail, but we wanted to put up the bimini, which is our, like, the big covering for a sailboat. And to be able to put that up, you can't really fly the mainsail. and just sitting out in the sun all day long, because, you know, we start in the morning and sail all day. We really wanted to have the Bimini up so we could have shade. Yeah. And so we could have put up the head sail on the front of the boat, but we would have motor sailed anyway. We would have kept the engine on and just kept going. And we were going fast enough. The waves were from behind us, so it was like pushing us along. So it was kind of a fun day of motoring up the bay, but we were all taking 1 hour shifts on the helm. And this is everyone on the crew, not just the people who knew how to sail. So, cause anyone can just drive the boat, you know?
Yeah.
But in those waves, like, we had some pretty good waves. So sometimes you'd have like a 4 or 5 foot wave come up behind you and like lift the boat up and you kind of slide down, and we were watching the speed go up. So we were taking, you know, turns competing on who could get the boat going the fastest.
Yeah.
In those waves. Yeah. But it was fun. Made it back and had a great time. And then we all went camping for a week, which was awesome.
Yeah.
Or for, good, you know, time. Some of a week. So
yeah,
man, it was good. And, but you know, we were planning on maybe doing the podcast, while we were camping last week, but you guys ended up having to leave a day early. So we didn't end up doing, so we just ended up skipping it, but now we're back again. Now it's, getting to the end of summer. So all the vacations are done and it's like days skipped. Although, you know, I don't feel too bad about it. Obviously I like to bring consistent content to the listeners, but, is what it is, you know?
Yeah, no, we tried, but we couldn't make it happen. We thought we might, but we didn't. But yeah. Camping was fun, like always. I had brought the e-bikes along and rode them all over the place. It was a great time.
Yeah, absolutely, it was great. Cool. All right. Well, you did your recommendation earlier. I'm looking for a recommendation. Where is that? Man, I just like had a good one, and now I can't find it.
The Instagram?
Yeah, it was an Instagram recommendation. But I can't find it. But let me see something real quick. I might be able to find. Hold on. All right. So I will make a recommendation. And this is actually for an event that's coming up. Give me 1 second. Handmade in Vermont. Sorry, I'm looking it up now. I just remembered, like, and shoot, VT. I'm sorry, it's
something somewhere.
Sorry,
somebody.
It's the Center for Metal Arts. They do. It's like a whole blacksmithing, you know, and metal arts school, and they have an event where they have an event coming up where they're using their like gigantic 3,000 pound power hammer. And here it is. Okay. Cambria Iron Conference, September 17th at the Center for Metal Arts. So it's next month. But they'll have, they'll be using the gigantic power hammer, which, you know, when they're doing giant metal and stuff on that, you need multiple people to run it. And actually I talked about, I think, Jeff Fader did a interview with the guy, shoot, I can't think of his name off the top of my head again, but he was, they were talking about it and how like amazing that is and the teamwork that it takes to run those hammers, because it's not like there's no like kick pedal where you just step on it and the power hammer goes. You have to have someone like running the throttle and the clutch and all this stuff together, and you have like multiple people holding these giant pieces of steel. So they're going to be running that along with a bunch of other stuff at the Cambria Iron Conference, which will be coming up again in September 17th. So if you want to check it out, you can go to Center for Metal Arts on Instagram and check it out there, because they just have some really awesome stuff. And hand forged in Vermont, or hand forged in VT, is Pat Quinn. That's what I was trying to find, his name. So he's the one who's kind of organizing it and running it through the Center for Metal Arts. So check out Pat Quinn and check out Center for Metal Arts and their event coming up. I think I want to try to get up there and do that, because that would be super cool. That's September 17th.
You need to try to drive up there or fly up there?
Drive up. It's Johnstown, PA. So it's not, you know, it's only a couple hours.
You said Vermont.
No. The guy who, Pat Quinn, his Instagram handle is Handforged in Vermont. Handforged in VT.
Okay.
But his, what's it called? The Center for Metal Arts is in Johnstown, PA.
So, okay.
Yeah, and that'd be cool. You know,
is it just a day thing?
I think it might be a weekend event, but you know, either way, if it, we could go up for a day or, you know, because I think, you know, a couple hour drive, it would be easy enough to go up and go check out what's going on and see the Center for Metal Arts and all the reliving of the past and blacksmithing, which is pretty awesome. And that, yeah, like that history of that town and the coal mill, the forges and stuff there that have been there for a really long time, steel mills.
Huh.
So, yeah. Cool.
All right.
Cool. All right. All right. Well, I know it's kind of a short one, but we're still, again, still in summer and still balancing all of our schedules. So we wanted to wrap it up, but thank you all for listening. Make sure you head over to YouTube, check out our videos. We did have the wine barrel table video came out last month at the beginning of last month in July. And this is the next one coming out in the next couple days here for our newest video. And, you can, so head over there, subscribe if you haven't already, check out our videos, support the sponsors, you know, go over to Skillshare, sign up, use our link in the video and, you know, sign up for your free month-long membership and, you know, check it out. And if you don't like it, you don't have to stay with it, but that will help, you know, everyone supporting our sponsors help us to keep making videos and make cooler stuff and, you know, keep us making stuff, which is what we want to do.
And keep getting sponsors where you only have to sit through, you know, a minute sponsor in the middle of a 20 to 40 minute video, and we really want to, that is, I mean, now that's probably the only and or best way to keep ads off of our videos, which we always continue to try to do,
right?
Yeah, but yeah, maybe you do prefer the one YouTube one because it's only 5 seconds and then you can skip it,
right? Exactly.
But I just really want to try to hold off as long as we can on that stuff, because
yeah,
nothing worse than every 3 minutes an ad. That's what, yeah, Google wants everyone to do on YouTube. So
that's crazy.
You can, it's annoying and not necessarily the maker or the YouTuber's fault, because if you just do automatic, you'll do it.
Yeah.
And maybe they don't realize, or if they do, whatever. And YouTube's constantly pushing, Google's constantly pushing for that.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it's just too much. It's not, it's like, it brings it all the way back to old school TV.
Yeah,
where,
right.
Where it was like 6 minutes of content, 3 minutes of,
yeah,
3 minutes of commercials, six, yeah, minutes, tease, commercial break. Like, it's,
yeah,
we're trying to get away from that.
Right, exactly. That's the beauty of YouTube, where we can put out content that's just like people, normal people making stuff and showing other people and sharing that, those skills, and getting away from the high production of normal TV. But all that being said, you know, a lot of us who are trying to do this are also trying to make it, you know, make somewhat of a living or have it help us. So if we can do sponsored videos, then we don't have to do the little weird ads that have nothing to do with what you like, you know. So if we could do sponsored videos on something like Skillshare, that is another platform that's sharing skills, you know, and trying to give people that ability to do stuff themselves, you know, then, you know, that's the stuff we'd rather spend a minute and talk about that. Because honestly, when I go through and I look for a video to watch and to do an ad read about, like, I'm getting excited about those videos. Like, oh, this is really cool. You know, like, I've learned a lot of stuff from the videos that I've watched on Skillshare and that I have then, like, used those for ad reads. So, you know, it is good stuff. So
yeah,
hopefully we can do more of that rather than fill the videos with ads, which we try not to do anyway. So this just helps us. Cool. All right, everybody. Well, if you want, head over to Instagram and check us out there. I did just post a picture of Devin and I with the new war bow. If you haven't seen it already, check it out. And so you can find me at The Art of Craftsmanship and Devin, The Art of Camera Guy on Instagram. And then if you want to support us further, you can head over to patreon.com/ The Art of Craftsmanship and support us there. And for all of our patrons over there, we really, really appreciate all of that support. All righty. Well, everybody, thank you all so much for listening. And we will talk to you next time.